Hello and welcome back to the Villa Filler podcast. I'm here as always with my good friend Dan Wiseman. Dan, how you doing, mate?
I'm not bad, mate. Late night. Within the Villa Filler has entered the babe station hours, I think we'll call them. It's a good name. I like it. Here we are. 20 to midnight. I don't mind. After a Villa win, I'll wait until the small hours of the morning to run it through with you, mate. Thanks to all of you guys. If you're watching on the night that this has gone live, then you're the real MVP. But for most of you guys that are checking it out, it's the morning after the night before for you guys. Villa have won 2-0 at home to Newcastle. But yet again, as we always do when this is the situation, Dan, I'm very jealous, as are everyone that is watching this podcast currently, because yet again, you're in attendance tonight. And you've most importantly, mate, I'm going to throw it on a personal level. You've ended that hoodoo, I feel now. Because like you did that first few games and it was looking, you know, I didn't want you to become a bad luck omen.
Yeah, no, before this, I was 1-1 for win, draw, loss. Obviously, the first game was the Leeds loss. The second game was the Burnley draw. And then the third one, the floodgates opened and we beat Crystal Palace, which is great. So it seems, I don't want to jinx it. I don't want to suggest this. It seems I might be good luck, guys. Maybe, just maybe. Saying that, whilst I'm good luck, I've had an absolute mare in all the press conferences. So I have been without the luck, but thankfully Villa have had it all. And tonight, Dan, I think given the circumstances, given the fact that Dean Smith was sat, you know, in the director's box, and given the fact that we were out without Super John McGinn, with such a quick turnaround after what was a frustrating, not necessarily performance, but result against Manchester City, it's really important that we've come out of this with the full 3 points, Dan. This is a game that if you wind it back, I mean, a year around this time last year, we'd just beaten Watford 2-1 with that Konsa/Mings goal. I'll let you guys decide whose goal it was in the comments. But things weren't really looking great, Dan. And we're a full year on. And actually, the question I wanted to ask Dean, but I couldn't because Zoom was inept, was, you know, we've gone, you know, Villa had gone from having no sort of real options to come off the bench, no attacking options. And then we were able to bring on both El Ghazi and Trezeguet, which is the, you know, the ill-fabled meme substitution for either El Ghazi for Trez that we saw so much last season. It just shows how much we've really come on, Dan. But throughout the evening, Villa caused, particularly in the first half, plenty of problems to Newcastle, notably down the left-hand side. And I'll run you through the average player positions when I throw it back to me, Dan, after I've spoke to you. But looking at it and just how Villa performed, again, the influence heavily comes from that left-hand side for Villa, don't it, Dan?
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. And just before we get into it, it's interesting that you sort of referenced last season, because after tonight, we've now won as many Premier League games this season as we did in the entirety of last. Wow. Which seems crazy, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
But no, you're absolutely right, mate. And this, we were, I think, heavily dependent on a few different areas, and the fact that you've referenced the left-hand side doesn't surprise me greatly. But I think the one thing that I was most impressed with tonight is that I don't ever felt, well, I say impressed with, but sort of perhaps that's not the right word, but maybe encouraged by, is the fact that I never really felt Villa got out of third gear. You know, there was never a moment where I was like, yes, this is Villa at full pelt, you know, swashbuckling, all out football that we know we can play. I don't think we see it perhaps as often as we'd like, and I don't think we saw it tonight, but I think that's almost something that you can be confident in that there were a lot of very good individual performances. I'm not saying that, you know, anyone played particularly badly, but I just think as a team, it wasn't quite 10 out of 10 full pelt attacking football. But we still managed to be very comprehensive, very dominant. I imagine you're about to give me the rundown of, Dan, some players really stood out tonight.
Absolutely. And, you know, down that left-hand side, as we alluded to, Newcastle really played right into Villa's hands, which I'd have expected anybody who was, you know, looked at Villa this season and thought, right, Jack Grealish players on the left, let's look to nullify that threat. And not Newcastle. Javier Manquillo essentially played as a right winger, with Newcastle left with a back three and a gaping hole in their right back position, which was wonderfully exploited by, you know, Target and the like. And just looking at the average positions, it doesn't actually surprise me at all that I believe number 14 is Isaac Hayden. Correct me if I'm wrong, Villa fans, but Mankio is further ahead than Hayden. And they're both just kind of on this right-hand side, very awkwardly positioned. You can have a look on who scored for that. But there's acres of space between where Jamal Lascelles is and where Javier Mankio should be, which there's absolutely no reason why that should have happened. That Newcastle's only real tactic for the whole game was that deep cross from Mankio to the back post to Andy Carroll, who I can't believe we're still watching Andy Carroll play Premier League football in the year 2021, Dan. I almost said 2020 then. Even that would have been amazing to see Andy Carroll play Premier League football in 2020. But here we are in 2021.
We are a year later.
Lumbering around the pitch, hacking down opponents recklessly. And it just made me think if he was on the receiving end of one of his tackles, that'd be a career ender for him because he is made of glass. But Villa, it was the 12th minute and we'd already seen Target penetrate and probe with a cross from that left-hand side. Which Watkins, was a matter of inches away from connecting with. But Newcastle didn't learn their lesson, Dan. Matt Target puts the ball in the box and Fabian Schär scuffed his cross, wasn't quite able to clear it. And just as that ball rolled over his head, there was that kind of split second between the time where Ollie leaps off the ground and before he's about to head the ball, I was thinking, it's too good to be true. There's no way Ollie has worked so hard all this time. He's struck the post, he's hit the woodwork, he's hit the bar countless times. There is absolutely no way this man is beating Darlow here. Lo and behold, Darlow just doesn't make himself big at all. Easy header for Ollie Watkins. Villa go 1-0 up, Dan. And I mean, I was so happy because we've spoken on this podcast countless times, Dan, that how Watkins really does set the tone for how the team attacks. And some fans have got on his back, with him not scoring in so long. The last time he scored, it was a brace against Arsenal at the Emirates. It was just so good to see Ollie get on the score sheet tonight, Dan. You could see how much it means to him as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It was the goal scorer that we all wanted to see, wasn't it? I think Villa fans on the whole really recognise what Ollie does for the team. And I think we've been wanting to see him break the last time he scored was before tonight was that brace against Arsenal away. And it was a run of 9 appearances without a goal whereby he'd been so unlucky, hadn't he, mate? He'd missed penalties. VAR seemed to rule him out whenever he did manage to get the ball in the back of the net. He had goals ruled out against West Brom and West Ham. He missed that penalty, hit the bar from that penalty against West Ham. He'd just been so unlucky, but he broke Duck. It was fortunate, yeah, but those are the goals that you need to break those streaks, aren't they? You often hear strikers reference those kind of opportunities whereby if you're in the right positions at the right time, if you just keep doing what you do best, then the chances will fall to you. You will just, that little bit of luck that you need will come your way. And Ollie got that tonight. And I think there were not doubts being cast over him, but that's a long time to go without a goal. And a side that, generally are quite goal-happy, Villa. We don't often, we don't have the problems that we did last season where we struggled to score goals. This season, we've, managed to put them away with relative consistency. But for Ollie to go 9 games, I saw in the pre-game on Sky, they were saying that only Patrick Bamford has missed more big chances in the Premier League this season than Ollie. And the odds were sort of stacking against him, but put all of those to bed nice and early on with his third-headed goal of the season as well. Only Calvert-Lewin has scored more headed goals this season than Ollie, which for his build is an interesting stat because, those aren't necessarily the situations you'd expect to see him converting. But absolutely delighted for Ollie. He was actually in an offside position when the ball came in. And so there was a little bit of worry whereby, thankfully, Schär has flicked it over his head and he's got that touch, which Ollie's then put home, because if he hadn't have done that and that target cross had gone through to him, he would have been called offside. But no, I was delighted, as were a lot of Villa fans when Ollie hit the back of the net. He's a real popular figure and hopefully we don't see him go through those 9 games again without a goal.
Absolutely. And another man, Dan, who is in fine form, I believe it's either 4 or 5 goals in 6 games now. The guy who is represented on the back of your home shirt, Dan. Bertrand Traore, you put everything on black and it came up, Dan, you did with that, because people were not sure how Bertrand was going to come. He was clearly going to, going to take time to embed in the league. I actually think he's probably settled into life at Villa a lot quicker than we expected, certainly just judging on how long it took the like of Trezeguet, Douglas Luiz to really settle into life at Birmingham. But what a goal from him. And I think that whole passage of play just summarised the game for both sides perfectly, whereby Darlow, his decision-making to try and punch that ball away as opposed to catch it, that's ultimately what cost Newcastle. They weren't able to see things through when it mattered. We had a nice little bit of play whereby Traore recycles the play, a little 1-2 with Grealish arriving late, scores an absolute screamer with his right foot, by the way. And to see that one hit the back of the net, it was so hard to try and stay quiet and not just, jump for joy. I knew as soon as that ball hit the back of the net, Dan, I was like, I'm going to have a very happy co-host on the podcast. Proven so many people wrong. He's proven us right, Dan. He's so important to how we play. And listen, as frustrating as his defensive shortcomings are in certain games, as Smith even said, pre-game a few days ago, he wants his forwards to score goals and to create goals. And that is what Bertrand is doing. And it's just a complete different dynamic to a winger that we haven't had at the club, dare I say, since the Ashley Young days. He's an absolute baller. It was such a good goal, Dan. Talk me through that one, because you had the benefit of the replays watching that again. Mm-hmm. It was just a really well-rounded move, I felt. We recycled the play really well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think the one thing that will go underrated, unfortunately, because of the nature of the finish, if we just sort of tucked it in the bottom corner or anything, I think the pass from Jack would have got a lot more credit. But it's such a, because it had just come from that corner, the box is still so congested. And Jack slides that ball through so many bodies to pick out Bertie. And Bertie, he's really stretching for that. It doesn't fall kindly into his path. Obviously, it falls onto his, I was going to say unfavoured, but that right leg is just for standing on, isn't it, when it comes to Bertrand Traoré? That right foot. And he's sort of stretching for it, reaching, it sort of falls a bit, but the technique that he uses to keep his knee over the ball and direct it, and when they hit the bar and you bounce back up into the roof of net, it's always so much sweeter. But yeah, 4-6 now for Bertie, and I'm obviously delighted for him in a personal sense. But I think but his defensive shortcomings are exactly that. I think it's just a lack of awareness, potentially. I don't think it's the fact that he's not able to do that, but Ligue 1 wingers aren't asked to do that kind of defensive work. It's such a difference when you come to the Premier League, what's expected of a winger, in that wingers almost have to play like fullbacks nowadays, because they do exactly the same running. It's not acceptable any longer for a winger just to sort of hover on the halfway line and be active in transition. They have to be involved in all phases of play, including defending. And I think naturally Traore will get up to that. It's still very early days for him, and he'll realise the situations in which he needs to get involved. But when a player is contributing like he is, and contributing in big games as well, to come up with big goals, I think you can forgive him for that. I really do, because what he offers you going forward, I think, make amends for it. And I think it's a shame that the likes of Anwar, considering the month of December he's just had, are only getting sort of 10 minutes at the end of the game. But when Bertrand Traoré is playing like he is, he's untouchable.
He really is. And, the 2-goal lead, that was more than enough for Villa to see this game out. The second half, by comparison, very boring. Villa were happy to let Newcastle try and come onto them, play the ball around the back. Got caught out a few times, certainly more times than you'd have liked to have been dispossessed. But thankfully, Cash, once Consa was dispossessed by Callum Wilson, and Cash must have ran back 25 yards before Wilson had even managed to get his head up and look for the pass, and he was immediately dispossessed, which I was just in awe of that. That was absolutely fantastic. Dino has said that he wasn't as impressed with the second half. I think everyone kind of noticed that there was a bit of a drop off, but with so many games being played so quickly, Dan, it's understandable. It really is. I'd just like to give a massive shout out to Marv stepping in. I was unsure on how this would work. I did think that we may have seen Jacob start, purely because I expected Newcastle to deploy a low block, have 10 men behind their ball, which, to be fair, they didn't really do for large portions of the game. They just didn't really do anything. Like, they didn't defend for their lives, but they also didn't you know, really put Villa under pressure. They were kind of just standing there. I don't really know how to describe it. We pride ourselves on like analysis on the Villa Filler podcast, but I don't really know how to analyze it other than they just kind of stood in. Maybe they were trying to play offside.
Mate.
Steve Bruce, that's the analysis. There you go.
You're absolutely right. And I have notes on this as well, actually. And one thing I was most surprised with Newcastle is how high they intended to press us. Like when we had goal kicks, their strikers were right on the edge of our area. And I really didn't expect that. But that really exposed two things. One, the midfield and defence for Newcastle, which was like a sieve. And I think that will explain why you saw Javier Manquillo so high up the pitch in your average positions, is because he wouldn't have known what to do. Newcastle, the triggers were all over the place and it left that midfield and defence so exposed. And it meant that Villa could play ultimately at about 60% possession and comfortably pass through Newcastle at points. So 60% capacity. Like, you know, I probably would have been at 60% possession as well, actually, and just pass through Newcastle. But it also highlighted, and if you have a bad press, it's a coaching matter. And that exposed and completely incoherent tactics from Steve Bruce, in that, you know, that is really how you can figure out how well a manager is able to coach his players, because setting up a good press is really difficult. Setting the zones in which you need to press, setting the situations, the triggers on when to go, which player goes where, which players drop in, and all that sort of thing. If you can really set it up, it's a really big tactical move. And Newcastle were a mess. And that, for me, I think, you know, shows up the kind of manager you're dealing with in Steve Bruce, in that he completely failed to set that up. And you're right in saying that it was just a mess, mate. I don't think Newcastle players knew whether to come and go. And just generally to sort of briefly touch on the Newcastle performance, and I tweeted this off the account, in that I just sort of felt sorry for Newcastle fans, because it looked so much like the Villa that we knew. Just these sort of a barrage of hopeful crosses whenever you got the players not knowing whether to come and go, not being clear on their roles, just incoherency across the team. It just reminded me of the Villa sides of old, and you do feel for Newcastle fans, because I've been there, and it's just hopeless, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not great. You know, they looked devoid of motivation as well. There were times in the second half, as I say, where they did try, and I think when Saint-Maximin came on, he attempted a handful of crosses, didn't really manage to do as much with them. But it's classic Steve Bruce. It's a classic Steve Bruce situation. Listen, if you want to hear two guys rant about Steve Bruce, just watch any of our podcasts from the Championship days. Like, that's essentially what the podcast was. Thankfully, Villa saw the light, and we've now got our Lord and Saviour, Dean Smith, in charge. I'd be interested to know, actually, and maybe I can't ever imagine anyone, you know, publicly coming out and saying this, but, you know, you've got someone like Elmo who has played under Steve Bruce for God knows how many years. I'd be interested to hear someone like his perception on how, you know, life is under Smith versus Bruce. That'd definitely be an interesting discussion to be had, which I can't imagine ever will be had, because, you know, I imagine he does have a lot of respect for Steve Bruce, which is absolutely fair. But Dan, a point that you made before we came on the podcast about Douglas Luiz and a certain Instagram post that you'd seen from him and his caption. Before you go into that, I did want to say I thought Douglas Luiz played really well. I thought, more so in the first half, where we saw Villa really come onto Newcastle, he helps. Like, the transition is so smooth with him, and we see it anyway when he plays as the six. But having the double pivot of Marvin Douglas obviously allowed Douglas to have the license to be the John McGinn of this side, let's say, and really, you know, bring the team forward. And I honestly felt that first 45 minutes, I felt like I was watching Douglas Luiz play for Brazil, and he was in that kind of double pivot with, you know, a Casemiro or a Fabinho. He really did. We saw the best of him. The ball sticks to his feet. He glides forward when in possession. He sets us up really well, plays interesting balls. You know, he's the complete midfielder. He's absolutely perfect, which is why I'm a bit confused by this Instagram post that you told me about, Dan.
Yeah, well, he's put it on Twitter as well, actually, now, Dan. And I like, just whilst I'm talking about this, I advise you to go and check it out, because he put the same thing on Twitter, just saying that fans can rest assured that he knows that he lost more balls than he should. And one, yeah, you're absolutely right, Dougie. You know, the thing is, he was only dispossessed once. He had a 90 90% pass completion rate. He tried 67 passes, 60 of them came off. So, you know, don't be too hard on yourself, Douglas. And that's what Jack Grealish has replied. Jack Grealish is in the reply saying, calm down, Dougie, we've won.
I've just seen that.
Have you seen that? There's a really funny reply from Dougie, which shows Jack's face when he got substituted off with the caption that my face when they call me to eat whilst I'm in the Call of Duty match. And if you follow Douglas Luiz on Instagram, you know he loves his Call of Duty.
Big so Warzone player.
Big Warzone player. It was an interesting role for Dougie because Marv is obviously that deeper line player out the two. And I think that we saw Douglas in some more advanced positions than perhaps he's used to. You know, usually he's the one anchor in that midfield in 4-2-3-1. But no, Douglas was a little bit higher up. So it was a slightly unfamiliar role, but I thought he did it really well. Again, I thought he was not an eclectic Douglas Luiz performance, but he did what was asked of him really nicely. But yeah, out of that midfield too, you're right in saying that Marv was the one that deserves all the plaudits tonight. He just, a lot of question marks around Marvelous in recent seasons have been around his passing. Yeah. And whilst he's not a risk taker, you know, he doesn't play, you know, he hasn't got the ability to split lines and cut through passes and release strikers and wingers onto their fullbacks or centre-backs with his passing. He keeps things relatively safe and, you know, there's a lot of sideways passing and that's not to hold against Douglas. But what he got sent out there today was a job to do. Dean Smith told him what his role was, told him exactly what he wanted, and he got that tenfold, you know. Made 8 interceptions, which is the most of any Villa player. And once you do that, just keep it simple. Nice passes, lay it off to the ball players, give it to Jack, give it to Douglas, give it to Ross, and let them do the work. And he did that. He misplaced just one of his 65 passes today against Newcastle. And that, for me, was just a player who had a clearly defined role, knew exactly what he needed to go out there and do, and just did it. No questions asked, no booking, not too many fouls. And for me, that shows a side to Marvelous, which, again, is going to be, when you look at the players who have come on in leaps and bounds, you're going to look at your El Ghazis, your Trezeguets, your Matty Targets, who we're going to come on and talk about because what a performance that man put in tonight. All these players, I think even Ezri Konsa has, you know, he was good last season, but he's just gone to another level this year. I don't think Nakambu will get the plaudits that he deserves for how well he's able to just be a role guy, not play for stretches and stretches of games on end and just come in and perform a task to really good standards. And look, I know Newcastle midfield is hardly the most dynamic and, you know, keeping Jonjo Shelvey and Jeff Hendrick when they're playing like they are in your back pocket isn't the biggest task that you're going to face in the Premier League this season. But still, for Marv, when he hasn't played for as long as he had, when there were doubts around him from last season, I thought he did really well tonight, mate.
He did, and he must have outjumped Andy Carroll on 3 occasions to win headers in the first half as well, Dan. It was I couldn't quite believe it when I was seeing it. But, you know, it just comes, you know, we've spoke on podcasts before, Dan, saying that the depth is still a concern, and we're looking, you know, we're hoping to add to that with a Sanson when he, you know, when that move gets done. And you can see Villa are clearly trying to take this squad forward, but it's really good that we can actually rely upon someone like Marv to step in when it matters, because this game could have easily been a banana skin. You know, this could have been the game where Villa slip up without a win since Boxing Day. Obviously, haven't played for so long as well. Psychologically, you know, I mean, a game in hand means nothing. Points on the board are what matters, and that's going to be on the back of the players' minds. Like, look, we're playing catch up. We've got to win these games if we want to finish at this certain place. We've seen players vocalise where they want to finish. You know, we've seen that from Emi, that he's hoping for Europa League football. So it's really important that, you know, that we're getting the best out of the squad, and I think we are. And obviously, we're looking to make additions, which is absolutely fantastic. But Dan, to talk about Matt Target, as you just alluded to there before, we kind of speak a little bit about Burnley and wrap this podcast up. I just feel like every week I'm like, yeah, I was just so stupid last season for saying everything I said about Matt Target. I mean, I stand by the criticism. I think this criticism was very valid, but I have to give him the plaudits and the recognition because his game's come on so much. I don't ever expect Matt Target to now be caught out with the slide ball behind him, you know, caught looking over his shoulder. This is a completely different player that we're talking about now, Dan.
Mate, and this is, it's funny the wording that you use there, because I again, sort of bit of a selfless plug for Heart of the Hole. But again, I tweeted off the account earlier that to say that he's come on almost feels like disrespect. he's a completely new player, as you just said. Like the Matt Target of last season, feels like who are you?
He's in a basement locked up, mate. Like, he's gone.
Where is this guy? This identical sin that you put out of nowhere. He looks so assured. I felt that season he played within himself and he looked a bit timid and a bit not frightened in different situations, but you can see that it was playing on his mind. But he looks so confident, so assured, so strong in the tackle, and the stats back it up, really. His one thing that I think you probably would have seen better than most, Dan, being inside the stadium, is that his outlet passing and some of the balls that he was playing from right back, from left back, really stood out. You know, completed 54 of his 59 passes. And when you're playing passes from wing back, they're not easy. It's not like we were talking about Marv, where you're sort of making 6-10 yard passes to the midfielders in and around you. You're having to play curved balls at the lines, curved three balls through to the strikers, balls into the middle of the pitch from wide areas. And so that pass success rate is really important, but it's those three interceptions, two aerial duels, which again, couldn't be said of Matt Target last season, two tackles won. He was an absolute beast. And so was both Matties. You know, you feel sort of a bit hesitant to compliment one without the other, but I thought both Matts were great. And that's, you know, it's contributing to 9 clean sheets in 17 Villa appearances for Emmy. Shout out to him again tonight, because whilst he didn't have to do anything too crazy today, just doing the basics again really well. Everything was clean. Everything was tidy. Thought Konsa and Mings both had good games. Konsa especially just makes everything look so easily. What an absolute man mountain. But no, Tiggs was, you know, we deserve to, you know, I felt like we came on this podcast every single game last season and criticised him, Dan. So you bet your bottom dollar I'm coming in. The apology is going to be as loud as the disrespect. I'm going to come on here every podcast and make sure I sing his praises, because yet again, Matty, you've done us proud, mate. And that's a real nice note, I think, to sort of encapsulate this game on and how far Villa have come from last season is in the performance of Matt Target.
Yeah, and just to touch on something there that you said, Dan, about doing the basics, that's what we're seeing the whole squad do. And I think that's why we're seeing so many clean sheets, we're seeing so many solid performances. Villa are still taking risks, but, you know, fundamentally, everybody is doing what they're supposed to be doing. We've brought it back to basics. And I think Craig Shakespeare is a massive reason for that. And we've had countless comments saying, you need to give Craig credit. And I can't believe we keep forgetting, but you know, it's that back to basics approach that I think we're seeing with Craig and with the whole coaching staff. And that we've even seen since, you know, the football had returned with Project Restart. Villa did the basics right and they stayed up. Villa doing the basics right, and we're now making that charge for European football. I'm not afraid to say it. That's what we're doing, Dan. That is what the Villa Fillers doing. Pumping that fist like in Morgan and Wise. That's what they're doing in the dressing room. They're pumping the fists. But Dan, just to briefly talk about Burnley before we do wrap up this podcast. You know, we're travelling to Turf Moor. They're coming off the back of an amazing 1-0 away win. Against, you know, the champions Liverpool, courtesy of an Ashley Barnes penalty. I'm not too worried about that performance, because we've seen how Burnley have performed just generally over the course of the whole season. And look, Villa had 34 odd shots on target against them at home not too long ago, Dan. We struggled to break them down, but I fully anticipate Villa to get a result against Burnley. As I say, they're very well organised against Liverpool, but I don't look at Liverpool as this side who are, you know, their armour is impenetrable anymore. We absolutely dismantled Liverpool. We ruined them 7-2. There's been many other scalps this season that have occurred against Liverpool. So I don't think we can look too much into it, especially as it was quite a dubious penalty that Burnley were awarded, if I do say so myself. It's going to be a tough game, Dan, but if Villa just carry on in the vein of form that they're in, I think we you know, we've seen how good our away form is. You know, we've not really been too lucky against, you know, the two Manchester sides recently with our last, you know, our previous two away games. But, you know, there's something feeling really good about this one against Burnley. And, you know, even when I am so confident and assured of a Villa win, I never really vocalize it, because you don't want to be the reason, you don't want this to get memed or whatever. But I again, like, I'm feeling really positive ahead of this trip, Dan.
Yeah, it's a difficult one to talk about, isn't it, Turf Moor? But when we played them the last time, they'd also come off a very positive result at a big away side. They'd just won 1-0 at the Emirates. And I know it's a bit more of a feat to come away from, you know, Anfield with a win, but they do play at the time of recording. They play tomorrow. So, you know, they've got a day less on recovery
today
than we
now,
do.
Actually.
Yeah, oh yeah. It's just quite past midnight, actually, a good spot. Yeah, they go to Craven Cottage in the FA Cup, which is not the kindest of draws. You know, that's a bit of a difficult game. But, you know, that win against Liverpool was all about grit and determination and making things difficult for the opposition. And they'll do that again. You know, they're coming into this game. We'll be looking at it just as positively, I imagine, as we are. But we do fancy ourselves away from home, don't we? Villa are a side that play very well away from home. I think we're so suited to the way that lends us to having to set up and stuff like that. And that, I think it'll be a really good game, actually. I really don't. And you don't have to say that when you're playing Burnley, but I think that's two sides that are coming into a good form, and Burnley, again, doing the basics very well, and Villa sort of providing a bit more of an expansive alternative. And maybe... You know, that this game's on the Wednesday, we record this on the Sunday. We might have a Morgan Sanson to talk about by then. I'm only saying this because I've just seen Andre Villas-Boas's comments from after their game. They played today against Monaco. Villas-Boas has apparently said to Sanson he would have liked Sanson to be in the matchday squad. He asked him if he wanted to play today. Sanson replied and said it would have been hard for him to do so. So that he said he was taking him out of the matchday squad. And then from there, Sanson left the club and has come to England. And that's not sort of rumour, that's come from AVB's mouth. So maybe by the time we play Burnley on Wednesday, we might have a new player to talk about.
That would be absolutely amazing. And don't you worry, guys. We already have you covered on Sanson. We have a transfer rumour podcast where we break it down, and you can bet your bottom dollar that when it is announced, when we get the here we go from Fabrizio, that we will be here to brief you again with a signing video. Dan, before we go, I've got to ask, I have to ask for a score prediction against Burnley. Stick your neck out. What are you saying?
2-0 Villa.
Do you know what? I would take 2-0, Dan. Another clean sheet. A brace, a comfortable win away from home. That is what we're both predicting for Wednesday's game. Now, if you guys did enjoy this podcast, albeit it was a late one, sorry about that. It's just what happens when I'm at the game. So, you know,
you're an important man, mate. You're an important man.
Got responsibilities, man. But here we are. Of course, couldn't miss doing a Villa Filler podcast with you, Dan, for you guys who, you know, have just been amazing this season so far. Just again, want to really thank you guys for all the support that we've had so far. On the podcast, on the transfer rumor mills, on everything, on the Morgan and Wise streams. Maybe we'll do another stream on Monday for you guys if you're feeling that, Dan, as we have had a fair few comments about that. So probably around 7 o'clock on Monday, Dan and I will be live streaming Morgan and Wise, our Aston Villa Football Manager save. So if you want to join us live, it'd be really good. We have like a nice Q&A essentially for an hour and a half, 2 hours. Speak about football, speak about Villa, speak about everything, Dan, really. So if you have any burning questions that you really want to ask Dan and I, hop into the chat, come watch us play Football Manager. It would mean the most. If you enjoy this podcast, hit the like button, comment your thoughts below on the result. Let us know who your man of the match was. For me, Ollie Watkins. Dan, who would you say man of the match? I didn't ask you that.
Yeah, I think we've got to give it to Ollie.
He broke his duck. You know, 9 games without a goal. He came back, led the line amazingly. And if you aren't, subscribe for more. We have plenty of videos coming for you guys. It would mean the world if you'd subscribe. We're looking to try and get to 4K subscribers by the end of the month. We don't have long. We have about a week left to try and get this target. I think if Morgan Sanson signs, there's a chance. So make sure you guys subscribe and hit the bell notification for more. Up the Villa.